Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Jeff Barber. We're here dealing with enforcement of a federal provision 25 U.S.C. 1621E subsection D is the specific issue in this appeal. Enforcement of ANMC's lien cannot operate to deny the injured person the portion of the recovery for that portion of the person's damages. That portion of the person's damages specifically relates to their other personal injury damages aside from the tribal entity's medical expenses.
Counsel, why does this statute have anything to do at all with the relationship between the health care provider and the individual who received the care? It is called reimbursement from third parties, and it seems to refer only to the relationship between the health care provider and third parties in both its old and its new form.
Right. Well, the third party, this was a tort recovery in the first place against the third party who injured the plaintiff in tort.
Right. And so this statute would deal with that, but it appears to me, at least, to have no effect whatsoever on any lien or any relationship between the health care provider and the individual.
Well, the statute's broad and refers to a number of avenues of enforcing its rights of recovery. One would be through the lien, the other would be through direct causes of action. In all of these different avenues, they're all subject to the provisions of subsection D, which specifically refers to the injured person and not operating to deny the injured person the recovery for that portion of the person's damages. In subsection D, the person is Ms. Blatchford.
Right, but the action that's taken under this statute is not an action against her directly or relating to the lien against her. It's an action against the tortfeasor, which did not, the United States never took an action against the tortfeasor.
Right. In an action against the tortfeasor, the same provision applies. I mean, it's a limitation of the ability of ANMC to put its interests and compete against the injured native beneficiary for recovery of benefits. Any instance where
ANMC... Why isn't it simply covered by Alaska's own medical lien provisions?
Well, in this particular instance, ANMC argued that it did not. Those provisions did not apply, and the reason was because they didn't comport with the statutory requirements under the Alaska Hospital Lien Statute.
Well, that may be, but that's a question of state law that's not in front of us. But
right. They're relying solely on their federal claim of lien. That's the issue in this appeal. The state lien issues are not an issue right now, and that's why we're not talking about all of the different deficiencies with the state hospital lien provisions. ANMC files both. They file a state lien and a federal lien. I think they conceded that the state liens were deficient because they didn't meet the statutory requirements. They're relying solely on the federal.
If we were to hold that Section 1621E simply has no application to this situation at all, then presumably the state lien question in all its glory would be dealt with either by the district court as a supplemental jurisdiction matter or by the state court.
No, because the ANMC's right of recovery is based, I mean, if you tossed out subsection D, you're left still with the other avenues that subsection D modifies, which is its enforcement of its right under, you know, its claim of lien. Now, there is no specific lien language in the 1621.
Well, there is a state health care provider lien in this case that was, it may be deficient for reasons that we don't know because we aren't asked to understand the state law, but there is a state law permitting a health care lien, and there is, in fact, a lien in the record.
Correct.
So it's there. Whether it's enforceable is another question, I guess.
Right. You can pretend for this instance of being here that it's not there, that it is not an issue. We are not dealing with enforcement of the state.
Right, we're not. But if we were to hold that the federal statute simply has no application whatsoever, it neither requires a state lien nor prevents the enforcement of a state lien, it's just not relevant, then presumably the parties will be left to deal with that in some other forum.
If the entire other provisions, not just subsection D, were inapplicable to the hospital's claims, that would be the case. but the hospital is relying on other provisions. We're relying on subsection
B. Your position is that you think that 1621 does cover the hospital's claim against your client.
It covers the hospital's claims. We disputed the lien claim. We lost that issue in the lower court. We're not disputing that in this regard. The lien, there's no language of liens. You know, the issue was that they file something. There's no enforcement mechanism. There's no judicial, you know, action overseeing their claim of recovery. There's no time limits in the federal statutes. There's all kinds of problems with them just filing a piece of paper and asserting a federal lien based on a federal law. But we're, at this instance, you know, we've essentially limited our appeal to this one specific issue, which is having to do with if we're going to, you know, if we lost the issue about whether this provision applies, then should not have lost this issue about whether it was limited by the subsection that specifically referred to the injured person's rights. I don't think that, I mean, one of the issues that the judge made a specific finding was that Ms. Blatchford would be unjustly enriched if she were to receive this right of recovery. You know, this was a lady who was critically injured in an auto collision as conceded by the hospital, the native entity. She had $60,000 over that of hospital expenses that were private hospitals separate from ANMC, separate from this hospital lien. It was $119,000 total recovery, maximum insurance recoveries available in this case. This idea that in addition to, I mean, after attorney's fees and costs and $60,000 of other medical expenses, lifelong pain and suffering, lifelong loss of earning, diminished earning capacity, lifelong disfigurement, that she would be unjustly enriched by the fact that she could avoid, well, I don't know if she would even have been able to avoid bankruptcy, frankly, dealing with the issue of the other private hospital's claims in this case. It's hard to imagine that Congress would have envisioned that this provision would have been, you know, meant to deprive a vulnerable, injured native of what limited security they had in an injury when that recovery is inadequate. It's inadequate to begin with. It's an equitable issue. We had a lot of issues dealing with the fact that, you know, it's like in the Allborn case with Medicaid. You know, the Allborn's a different, dealt with a different statute. Medicaid's a different statute. There is nothing in that language, in the federal language for the Medicaid claim that deals with equitable principles like made whole. The Supreme Court created that essentially out of whole cloth and application of equitable principles, which is the same principles that we're relying on in this case. Common law principles of equitable made whole. In another instance, it deals with the common fund doctrine with the attorney fee issue. In any case, we start with, you know, the statutory construction, beginning with the express language of the statute, and that's what we were relying on with this argument in this case, was enforcing the specific language to apply to Ms. Blatchford's case. I don't know if the panel has other questions. I wanted to reserve at least.
Yes, you're welcome to reserve your last 2 minutes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Barber.
Morning. May it please the Court. Richard Monkman for the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. With me today is Michael Douglas, who is on the brief. The Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium operates the Alaska Native Medical Center here in Anchorage, pursuant to a compact with the Secretary of Health and Human Services. It's a tertiary care trauma center for Native health care in Alaska, a state-of-the-art hospital, providing care to approximately 120,000 and 140,000 Alaska Natives and American Indians who reside here in the state.
Council, what does this statute, 1621E, have to do with a lien filed against the recovery of the injured person? It appears to relate only to reimbursement directly from third parties.
I'd say in this case, Your Honor, the reimbursement at issue was insurance proceeds from the injured party's automobile insurance, both direct and uninsured motorist coverage. So,
except that what's the statute provides for enforcement of your right against third parties by intervening or joining a civil action against the third party or instituting your own civil action against a third party. Neither one of those things happened. The proceeds went directly to the injured person and you have a lien. And I guess I just failed to see what this statute has to do with it at all, that there's either a valid lien under state law or there isn't. But which is not directly before us, but I'm struggling with when the statute gives you specific rights and you're not going through any of the hoops that it describes, what does it tell us?
Well, we did file action, Your Honor, counterclaim plaintiffs in this suit against Ms. Blatchford as the holder of the insurance policy proceeds.
But the statute doesn't provide for that. The statute says that you can intervene in an action brought by the person, that's not this, against a third party, or you can file your own action against a third party, but it doesn't appear to provide an action against the individual served.
Judge Burgess's reasoning below, which I think was sound, is that it's a distinction without a difference whether you are seeking direct recovery from the insurance company or seeking direct recovery or recovery of the settlement proceeds when you first learn about them. To hold otherwise would mean that plaintiff's counsel could essentially avoid paying either the secretary or the Tribal Health Consortium in any kind of insurance settlement by simply not notifying.
Would this provision allow you to bring a direct action against Ms. Blatchford, even if she hadn't obtained any insurance proceeds? What if you simply thought she had the money?
No, it would not, Your Honor. This is strictly against third-party proceeds, and Ms. Blatchford is entitled to medical care at no personal cost.
Now you changed the language of the statute just slightly when you answered my question. I don't know if you noticed that. You said it entitled them to sue for third-party proceeds, which is different from suing third parties, which is what the statute said, as Judge Graber has pointed out.
I think it says any responsible or liable third party. We're not suing.
I'm sorry, what statutory text are you relying on?
1621E, subparent A, right of recovery. An Indian tribe or tribal organization shall have the right to recover from an insurance company, health maintenance organization, third-party tortfeasor, or any other responsible or liable third party.
Right, and then on enforcing it in subsection E, it permits you to intervene or join a civil action brought by the individual, and I'm paraphrasing here, or instituting your own action for relief.
Right, and there, you know, I disagree with opposing counsel in terms of how Alaska law does come into this. Alaska law does provide, you know, for a hospital lien, it allows any healthcare provider to file a lien to give notice to the world, and specifically allows a lien to be filed against settlement proceeds. Now,
why isn't that the appropriate mechanism in this case? It's not in front of us directly to determine whether the lien that was filed here is fully valid under state law, but why isn't that your recourse?
We believe the statute gives both the secretary and tribal health organizations a cumulative range of remedies, that it is the mechanism by which federal law allows the tribal health consortium here to execute against any remedy it has in order to get reimbursement for the health care costs that it paid out on behalf of a native patient.
Do you know of any other case or any situation in which insurance a hospital has gone against the patient under 1621E?
I do not, Your Honor. We have had, three district court decisions in Alaska involving insurance proceeds, in which the district courts have uniformly.
In which you were actually suing the recipient of health services who had collected insurance proceeds? Actions against the insurance companies.
Well, in all three cases, Your Honor, it involved insurance settlements where the Tribal Health Consortium had put the attorneys on notice that we have a right of recovery against those proceeds. And in all three cases, the attorneys for the plaintiffs, for the patients, filed suit and the consortium responded, similar to here. So it's a situation where, these cases are invisible to a degree. The plaintiffs' cases are invisible to any healthcare provider. The way the health care system for reimbursement works is that the healthcare providers file liens to put the world on notice that we have a claim for reimbursement, whether it's a private hospital with a lien under Alaska state law or a tribal hospital, tribally operated federal hospital.
Is there anything under state law of which you are aware that would preclude, in generic terms, the enforcement of a health care lien simply because it's a tribal hospital? That's
No, quite the contrary, Your Honor. The Alaska Supreme Court has said that the tribal hospitals are entitled to utilize a state court route.
So there is a remedy, even if this statute is not the applicable route.
There is a remedy, yes, Your Honor. But we view this statute as, I think the Alaska Supreme Court's phrase was as federalizing the state remedy. And it was discussed below with Judge Burgess. You know, his view was that the state remedy exists. It can be enforced by the Tribal Health Consortium through this statute. There is a savings clause in the statute which provides that, you know, no state law may diminish or reduce the right of recovery.
Your recovery here is limited to the amount of the proceeds that you received from the insurance company. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And if you were to file under the state lien law, you would not be limited by the insurance proceeds. Is that correct?
Well, that's correct. And, you know, we could could go after the tortfeasor.
You collect, but you theoretically are not limited by whatever she's received from the insurance company if you file under state law.
That's correct, Your Honor, although, you know, we still, as a governmental program for which she's a beneficiary, we would not be seeking recovery from her personal assets, but from recoveries from third parties, yes. Indeed, there. One of the problems in these cases, we don't know whether the tortfeasor had additional assets that could have been used. We don't know what other insurance might be available. What we do know is that Ms. Blatchford received insurance proceeds, which are now in her attorney's trust account, or were, I'm sorry. They have paid them to us since the judgment. And that's what we were seeking. So we're strictly seeking third-party revenues, as we see it in accordance with the statute, from a responsible party, that being the insurance company.
Even though it's been paid over, presumably it's not moot, because if we reverse, you'd have to give the money back, right? Is that why it's not moot?
Yes, I think that's correct, okay. Your Honor. And I would say, you know, again, the money went into the attorney's trust account. It didn't actually get to Ms. Blatchford, or at least the $53,000 at issue, because we had filed a lien, as the district, you know, the Alaska District Courter allows us to do. We filed a lien to put, the world on notice that these costs were expended for Ms. Blatchford's benefit, and we were entitled to recover them. So the proceeds went into trust. And at that point, the dispute began. So they weren't actually paid over to Ms. Blatchford.
I don't think we have any further questions.
Okay. Thank you very much,
Thank you very much. Yeah. And Mr. Barber, you have a couple of minutes remaining.
Yes, the money was held in trust because even though there was a dispute, we as an obligation of the trust fund, well, as attorneys for the court, we can't disperse disputed funds. And so although the ANMC made a claim of lien and we thought it was invalid because they didn't follow the state hospital lien laws, and they didn't file the federal lien until we actually filed the declaratory action in this case, claiming the invalidity of the state hospital lien laws. But in any case, it was held in fund because they were disputed. The problem here is that when we're talking about third-party recoveries, in this particular case, only part of the recovery that we're dealing with was technically a third-party recovery from the tortfeasor on behalf of the insurance company that paid to release the claim. The other half was first-party insurance benefits, specific to Ms. Blatchford. It was based on a first-party claim, and there's a big distinction between first-party and third-party claims. We didn't really get into that in this case, but it's another issue. It has to do with the fact that there's no allocation when we deal with recovery of what, you know, as Mr. Monkman's indicated, a personal asset to Ms. Blatchford versus a recovery that's a specific medical expense recovery. This isn't health insurance. The benefits are for the panoply of damages that a person suffers, compensation for all the different things. If we had a trial, the case went to a verdict, we would have a verdict form that said $300,000 for pain and suffering, you know, $500,000 for loss of earnings and diminished earning capacity, $100,000 for ANMC's medical expenses, $60,000 for the medical expenses. They'd all be earmarked. And the problem here is that ANMC, because it's a non-segregated fund, they want to compete with the injured native for the entire amount, regardless of whether that money is for injury, for compensation for pain and suffering, for other matters. That's at the heart of this matter here, is that it's this competition of the tribal entity and the government against the individual for a specific limited recovery. We talked a little bit about the federal rights and how it relates with the state's rights. It was in the ANTHC versus ER case that the ANMC's position or the tribal entity's position was that it was specifically the federal legislation, 1621, allows it to utilize the state hospital lien laws. That should be the normal avenue that they follow. The injuries are not invisible to the tribe. The injured person, you know, the tribal entity, goes to the hospital. The hospital,
You are, but you may quickly sum up if you wish.
Thank you. The hospital's on notice. The hospital has a third-party recovery department. They seek, you know, are this person injured in an auto collision? Is there insurance? Is there someone to bill? Is there health insurance? Can we bill Medicaid for this treatment? It's not invisible to the hospital. They file the liens based on, you know, the third-party recovery just as easily as they could file a third-party intervention. So in any case, it's competing against the person whom the government has the quasi-fiduciary trust relationship with, and in this case puts the burden on the least the person least able to deal with the shortfall. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We appreciate the arguments of both counsel. They've been very helpful, and the case is submitted.